Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ohio State Marching Band Director Jonathan Waters has been fired after a two-month-long investigation revealed a litany of allegations of a sexualized culture within the revered organization. OSU President Michael Drake released a video statement yesterday. He says action had to be taken.
We can, and according to our values in Title IX, we must do better. Even one instance of harassment or hazing or assault is one too many. And though we are not alone among campuses across America facing these serious issues, this is our home and our responsibility.
The decision to fire Waters has been met with equal amounts of approval and disapproval. Current and former band members have railed against the firing, but many have also supported it. Joining me now in the is WOSU Public Media web producer and co-host of WOSU's After the Score podcast, Thomas Bradley. Welcome to the show, Thomas.
Thanks, Ed, for having me on.
So you've interviewed some former band members about this. They don't want to be named. They don't want to be identified. That's pretty much universal in our efforts to talk to band members. Tell us what they told you.
Some of them said the experiences outlined in this report were part of the cultural norm. It existed when they were there. It existed before they were there. And some of them said it was one of the most terrifying experiences of their life, that they really wanted to be in Ohio State's marching band when they were growing up, but this was what they had to do to be part of that family. Some of them thought it was terrifying, and some of them thought it was I'm not going to say really cool, but they thought it was a cool aspect of being in the marching band kind of fraternity, if you will.
Let's talk about some of the examples in the report. There were songs that they sang, lyrics that were new lyrics sung to familiar tunes, like New York, New York. Most of the lyrics are not repeatable on the air.
We can't say them on here, but they took fight songs of rival schools. They took fight songs of Big Ten. They took songs like New York, New York. And you've got the list in front of me, and I was struggling to find one we can give examples of. They are vulgar. They are sexually explicit, and they are they are not repeatable on air, quite frankly.
The report, by the way, is available. There's a link on our website at WOSU.org if you want to check that out. The former band members that you spoke with were, you said, equal parts supportive of the decision to fire Waters and not supportive of that. What the people who thought it was okay to fire him, what was their reaction?
Their reaction was sad because John Waters has taken this band to a new level. We saw all last football season the national recognition this band has gotten. We've seen them innovate the band and by giving the section leaders iPads and putting all their performances in saving paper and making an environmental impact. We've seen them do the moonwalk with Michael Jackson in formation. We've seen them do video game shows and a bunch of really cool halftime shows that have gone viral and taken the OSU marching band to another level.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We'll try to address any of the questions we can. Coming up, we're going to be talking to an expert on hazing and the culture of hazing, which is part of this issue that we're talking about today regarding the Ohio State University Marching Band. If you're a former band member and you want to weigh in on this, you won't be your identity won't be divulged. This would be a good time to let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. If you're a former band member of any big band somewhere, and you can tell us about whether or not this is a typical culture, if you're familiar with the report, give us a call. Let the screener know if you support or not the decision by Ohio State University to fire the band director, Jonathan Waters, so that we can make sure we have the balance we need for the program. Again, the number is 614-292-8513.
Some of the band members I talked to that did not support the decision to fire John Waters is that this culture existed well before he was there. Longtime OSU marching band director John Woods retired about two seasons ago, and John Waters took over as full-time band director. And they said he made efforts to improve the culture of the band. He took steps as so far as suspending a band member who made inappropriate and lewd comments towards another band member, and suspended him, that band member, for several games. So there was feeling out there that Waters was doing the right thing and trying to improve the culture.
What do we know about why the university fired him? His lawyer is saying that at first they said, change things mm-hmm. and we'll keep you, but then turned around and unexpectedly fired him.
I honestly do not know why. It seemed that they offered him an out to stay band director if he had a zero tolerance policy. But it's possible the last 2 months that the evidence just stacked up too much.
There are Title IX implications too. OSU President Drake mentioned that, mm-hmm. that this could be part of that. We just don't know.
Right. And Title IX, for those that don't know, is an act and a fair balance, not only in sports, but in university culture, that there's a balance of male and female sporting events, and that there's
a culture that is accepting and embracing of women in sports,
right.
and that sort of thing. RJ in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, RJ.
Hi. One thing I was wondering, I was a member of a sorority in college, and we had very, very, very strict no hazing policies, to the point where I thought some of the things we couldn't do were kind of crazy. But whenever something comes out about a fraternity or a sorority hazing, it seems like everyone's on a witch hunt to end the organization, you know, and to punish all these kids. But a lot of the comments I've seen about the OSU band members are, kids are going to be kids, you know, this is just part of the culture. And I think if it had been, you know, the Phi Psis at OSU doing this, there would be a much different reaction. But since this is a well-respected and well-loved organization, that people might be giving them a little leeway.
That's a very good point, RJ. Sorority and fraternities have that kind of watch eye on them at all times. And it seems like the marching band kind of slipped under the radar because they aren't part of that normally watched Greek life.
If you're in the band, most likely you don't have the time to be in a sorority or fraternity, for one thing.
It almost is their sorority and fraternity, mm-hmm. the way they come together. And you're absolutely right. It seems that they kind of slipped under the radar.
RJ, were you in a sorority, did you say? Yeah, you were.
Yes, ma'am, I was. And I wasn't, we had a very strict no hazing policy, but I was in a different organization where there was hazing, but it was absolutely nothing to this extent.
Thanks a lot for your call.
Yes, ma'am.
614-292-8513. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. There were songs, mm-hmm. the lyrics. A lot of these go back a long time.
Yeah. The unofficial songbook is quite lengthy. As you can see there, you've got it in front of you. It's somewhat 30-some pages of songs.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the index right there. There's probably 75 to 100 songs on there.
I mean, I can tell you some of the names, and some of them I can't. Purdue Fight Song, which you can assume the lyrics are anything but.
They're not what they're supposed to be.
Yeah, Michigan State Fight Song, my alma mater. I can sing that right now, but I doubt it has anything to do with the lyrics in this book. A lot of stuff I just literally can't repeat.
One of the big things that people have been getting on and upset about are the rookie nicknames for band members. Right. And we can't repeat a lot of them, but the idea is that everyone who is a first-year band member is referred to as a rookie, and each rookie has their own unique nickname. And some of them are harmless, and some of them are funny, but some of them are very sexually driven, and they're required to for their entire first year, and most of them, from what I hear, adapt their nickname throughout their 4 years in the band. Most of them are referred to this by this name for the entire time.
S in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi. You have to turn down your radio. You have to turn down your radio, S in Westerville, or we can't take the call. So do that. How you doing?
Hello.
Do you have it turned down?
Yes, I do.
Thanks. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. My comment was, it is very unfortunate that he did lose his job, you know, under such circumstances. But there is protocol to follow. You know, whenever you're hired on anywhere, there's rules that you have to follow. And I'm sympathetic to him losing his job, but I'm also sympathetic to the students who had dreams of being on OSU's band, and, you know, it was thwarted because once they became involved, then they realized what they were up against. And, you know, OSU is a very prestigious school. So, you know, the kids who went there with these dreams and to go there and realize the underlying factors, I think that was very unfortunate for those students. So,
right.
You know.
You mean the ones who maybe weren't able to cut it. They just couldn't take it, so they just left.
Right. I mean, a lot of kids aren't designed that way, you know, to be with all the underlying circumstances, you know, hazing and such things. Mm-hmm. You know, some people are in for the ride, and a lot of people just, you know, they're not in for that type of ride, and that's very unfortunate for those students.
Yeah, someone suggested to me this morning that it probably starts in high school. Now, I know I'm aged, but that's not what at all what I remember in high school. Thomas?
It seems lately, I was in high school band myself. Nothing like this went on at my particular high school, but I went to a small Christian high school.
And I went to a big public.
Yeah, it seems like almost band culture has kind of been carried away in pop culture. There's the American Pie series had a movie called American Pie Band Camp where a lot of this stuff was going on. And I don't know if one led the other or pop culture came first and then mm-hmm. it kind of became a part of band culture, or the idea for the movie came out because that's the way some high school bands are these days.
S in Westerville, thanks a lot for your call. We appreciate it. Loretta in Cleveland, you're on the air. Hi, Loretta.
Oh, hi. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
I was telling you, the girl that answered the phone, that some of my sorority sisters stopped by last night, and this topic came up.
Uh-huh.
And I think we must have talked about it for 45 minutes or so.
Right.
And at the end, we had all decided that the band director had been Obama'd.
What do you mean?
He's being blamed for things that he's not responsible for, things that have been going on for years. People act like all this stuff is brand new, but they have a scapegoat, and as long as they can blame it on someone, see, Ohio State don't want to turn into another Penn.
What would you do? What would you do instead?
Well, see, this is something that we all agreed about. You know, when you see something, say something, you got to start making notes and documenting when you've seen, you know, these types of things happening. You kind of have to cover yourself. And this is, you know, what the crux of the matter is. Penn State went down for the same types of stuff. And if this guy, he saw these things happening.
I don't think Penn State went down for the same sort of stuff at all, Loretta. I think Penn State went down for some, in many ways, much more serious. There was a serial abuse of children.
There needs to be a little perspective here.
Yeah.
But I think she makes a point I've heard a lot. But there's also the review that Ohio State released found that John Waters was in the room when some of these hazing allegations were going on. He was on the buses when they were going to away games where hazing occurred. And the review even found that he participated in calling some of the band members the sexually driven nicknames, and that he was a part of the nickname process. It did give him credit that he outlawed some nicknames they came up with, but he was very much a part of it. And he's a former band member himself. He was in the band and grew to be an assistant and then took over as director.
All right, Loretta, thanks a lot for that call. Loretta testifies to the fact that this is what people are talking about today. Mm-hmm. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have a couple calls that we'll take, so stay with us. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be right back. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Ohio State Marching Band Director Jonathan Waters has been fired after a two-month-long investigation revealed a litany of allegations of a sexualized culture within the revered organization. Ohio State President Michael Drake released a video statement yesterday, and he says the band's internal culture must reflect how it is viewed on the public stage.
It is my sincere belief that this excellence will continue and will even be enhanced, and that the band will act in concert with the core values of Ohio State.
That was brand new Ohio State President Michael Drake kicking off his career here with
less than 1 month into the job.
A pretty whopping scandal. My guest in the studio is Thomas Bradley. That's what you get for having two last names. Thomas Bradley, he is a WOSU public media web producer and co-host of WOSU's After the Score podcast. If you have a question or comment, you're welcome to join the show, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, we're going to be hearing from a psychologist and author of Preventing Hazing, How Parents, Teachers, and Coaches Can Stop the Violence, Harassment, and Humiliation. She'll be joining us in just a few minutes. And remember, this two-month-long investigation was spurred by complaints from a member of the band.
Right.
And President Drake mentioned Title IX considerations, which may have something to do with the decision to fire Jonathan Waters. We don't know exactly yet why they did it, why they fired him instead of taking corrective action. Although there are recommendations for corrections in that report, right?
And there's going to be a longer report and investigation done. There is a task force being formed led by former Ohio Attorney General
state senator and former auditor, and then most lately former Ohio Attorney General Betty Montgomery.
She's going to be leading the task of lawyers and consultant groups that are going to dig in deeper than this issue, and should take longer than 2 months, and see what other might be and what other action they should take.
Brian in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, Brian.
Hey, good morning. Okay, so John Waters inherited the problem of this hazing, and obviously Michael Drake should have some culpability, maybe not as much because he just inherited it, because he's the president of the university. So by default, just like this, applying the same rules you apply to like Sarbanes-Oxley, that the head of the university should take some ownership of it. But even though it might not be fair to ask Michael Drake to do that, Gordon Gee should certainly be held accountable to some degree. And you know, the university is still paying him an enormous amount of money. The more important point I wanted to call about, though, is about 2 years ago, there was a story in the news about one of the other athletic teams that was had a hazing accusations, and they were actually prohibited from any activity for 2 years. So the entire rowing program was shut down 100% for 2 years. And clearly there has to be there should probably be some consistency here, and that people punish people. Obviously the rowing team, 90% of the kids had no problem, were not involved in any of the problem
but
activity.
But they were all punished
for it. For 2 years.
Wow.
Shut down, off the water, zero activity. So
that's that was an action taken by Ohio State.
Right, that was at Ohio State, yes.
It's kind of curious. I'm wondering if the NCAA can get involved at any level with something like this. That's interesting.
I don't wish that punishment on them at all.
Of course not.
But I mean, I think Michael Drake should say, look, I inherited the problem just like them. I'm going to give back $500K on my salary for a year. Or, you know, Gordon Gee we should bring Gordon Gee into this problem. He can't wash his hands of it, and he was the president of the university. If the president of a company has a bunch of dirty, you know, people working for them, they sign off on a SOX, you know, that they're certifying that their company is compliant. Gordon Gee probably had the same type of thing with, you know, Title IX and NCAA and other people. I mean, I think that Gordon Gee should be held to some account, in my opinion.
That's interesting. I mean, I kind of get that. It'll be interesting to find out to what extent he did know anything about this. But Michael Drake, I mean, the guy just started.
He took over on July
1st. Even if he didn't know, you know, I mean, you're supposed to know. The president is supposed to know, and they're supposed to certify.
We can't
let these guys keep passing the buck down and firing some low-level guy, in my opinion.
I think he might have known to some extent, and this investigation started
two months ago.
So this started pretty much as soon as before he even stepped into office, and they were probably waiting for the completion of the review.
And they took action.
I'm not letting any higher university officials off the hook, but I think the timing for condemning Michael Drake for this, it just isn't there.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
Yeah. I get your point, Brian.
Still, he has to set this high value, high level of seriousness. I mean, they have to, you know, you can't just pass the buck up just because you're 1 month. I mean, the other guy could say, oh, I've just been here for 2 years. That's not long enough. He has to take some accountability.
You know, I can't get my mind off the fact that they took the OSU rowing team out of commission for two whole years. I mean, what if they did something like that with the marching band? That would be like taking the football team out of commission for 2 years. That's kind of mind-blowing.
And I'm not saying that they should do that, because I thought the what they did to the rowing team was unbelievable. But you know,
they set a precedent.
The right people need to be held account, not just blaming the kids.
You know, there's another thing. You said that Jonathan Waters inherited this culture. He not only inherited it, he grew up in it. So it's hard. I just wonder. And we're going to be talking to a hazing expert soon. I've been thinking about sort of that. I don't like to use the word brainwashed, but if you grow up in something, it becomes normalized after a while. You know what I mean?
Exactly. He brought up a good point about the rowing team, and that's an interesting precedent they set. But
yeah,
I'm interested to talk to the hazing expert to see if that culture existed because he grew up in it, and that's what he knew.
Yeah, Brian, thanks a lot for your call. Appreciate it. Jim from Columbus, welcome to the show. You're a former band member.
Yes.
Welcome. Tell us what you think and what you know about it.
Well, I was a band member for 5 years. I was a squad leader for 2 years. And anybody who has read the report, I don't think anyone is contending with the issue that the culture needed to change, especially in today's society. With transparency being what it is, with Title IX being what it is, with the recent events at, you know, Florida A&M and University of Wisconsin Marching Band a couple years ago, you know, it's out there. And you read the report, it's very clear that a culture change needed to happen. I think the administration they did it the wrong way. They fired John Waters, who I think is the perfect guy to elicit that change. And John Waters is very well respected with the band members, but he's also very well respected with the alumni. And you have to understand that when change is going to happen in an organization that is over 100 years old, it has to happen slowly, and it has to have consensus from the current members and the alumni. And I think John Waters was trying to change the culture. Now, I do believe he is guilty of not documenting enough what he was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
If he had a lot more documentation of him trying to change that culture, then I don't think he would have been fired. But it just seems to me that the administration missed an opportunity to give him a mandate. You know, you have 1 year, and we want to see positive steps to change this culture, because, as I said before, I think the culture did need to be changed. It's very clear.
You know, I'm kind of wondering, one of the things we don't know, Jim, is what the university did ask him to. There's questions about whether they first offered him a chance to stay on and make changes and then turned around and changed their minds and fired him. We don't know. It's going to be interesting to find out those things.
Well, you know, in the interest of transparency, why not? Why don't we know?
It just happened yesterday. There's a lot more to hash through on this. Let me ask you, I mean, when you were a member of the band, what did you make of that culture yourself?
I think it was, first, let me be clear, you know, the term hazing, I think the term hazing is being thrown out there. And I just want to be very, very clear that in my 5 years in the band, and I was in the early 90s, on no occasion was anybody forced to do anything that they did not want to do. And I unequivocally, and I will stick to that, there was never one instance where anyone was forced to do what they did not want to do. We had within my row, the Midnight Ramp, which is, you know, very widely publicized. We had members of my row that chose not to do that. And that was fine. That was absolutely fine.
Jim, can I ask, were they forced to be there, or were they allowed to be absent? Okay.
No, they were not required to be there. The Midnight Ramp tradition is...
Why don't you tell us what that is so that listeners who may not be familiar know?
Well, it's the night the band is selected, or, maybe the night after, the band members they march into the stadium at night, and, you know, some band members are wearing pajamas, some band members are wearing underwear.
Okay.
I don't know how that tradition started, but I know that when I did it, it was a lot of fun. I wore my boxers. My row members, we had some members wear pajamas. We had some members, like I said, who chose not to go.
Okay.
There was never any judgment. There was never any repercussion for not doing that. So I've been listening to your show, and I've been listening to what is being said, and I've been watching on social media, and I just want to be very clear with all the listeners out there that in my experience, now I do have a 5-year experience, and that is that's a pretty short window, but never one time in my row or any other row were there any actions that were forced on anybody where they didn't have the right to say no.
Okay. Jim, thanks so much for calling us. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye. I want to turn now to another guest who we have to get put on the air. Her name is Dr. Susan Lipkins. She's a psychologist and author of Preventing Hazing: How Parents, Teachers, and Coaches Can Stop the Violence, Harassment, and Humiliation. Welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, we just heard from Jim, a former member of the Ohio State University marching band from the 90s, and he made the point that nobody was ever forced. And I believe him. I believe what he said, and I believe he that's what he thinks, and it may be true from his experience. Do we always necessarily know how other people feel, though?
Well, I think that we should look at what the word forced means.
Okay.
Now, in some cases of hazing and sexual harassment, there is the use of actual physical force, but there's also intimidation, and there's what we call peer pressure. So if everybody's doing it and you're going to be the one person who's not doing it, you kind of just fall into place because you're not wanting to be so separate or different. And it really happens to adults, too. You know, if everybody's taking a drink, it's sometimes hard to say no, or smoking a joint or whatever else it may be. And it's even harder for younger people, people in college, and people who are in a group. They want to be the same. They want to be accepted. They want to be like everybody else. So it's as if their morals and their judgment go out the window. And when they're in these situations, they do what everybody else does. And it's accepted. And part of the reason it's so accepted is that it is a tradition and is a code of silence, which means that nobody's going to tell, theoretically. Nobody's going to get in trouble. And it continues and continues until somebody tells and somebody gets in trouble. And then it blows up and they go, oh, you know. The insurance companies actually have something they try to teach, particularly the Greeks, and they say, can you pass the grandma test? What's the grandma test? Do you want your grandma to see you doing this? And you don't want your grandma to see you doing this, or you don't want your grandchildren to see you running around in your underwear just because you got accepted into the band, or you don't want your kids to be exposed in the sexually explicit ways or being called those names. You know, like, you don't want your kids, when once you have them, to be knowing, oh, my name was, you know, some sexual name, as was happening in Ohio State. Then maybe it's not such a benign thing as it seems while you're in the middle of it, or as your guest was just talking about.
The OSU Marching Band has been accused of having an overly sexualized culture. To what extent is this typical of a hazing culture?
Well, being highly sexualized has been integrated in hazing a lot more in the last 10 years, I would say.
So it's relatively recent.
Relatively recent, yeah, 10, 15 years, I would say. I mean, there's always been some sexual stuff. You know, even in the 80s and 70s, there were things called the elephant walk and other kinds of things that were sexualized.
Mm-hmm.
But the degree of sexualization has increased tremendously, both in males and females, and it's become almost pornographic in many ways.
To what extent, what is the line between something being inappropriate and childish and something being like hazing and damaging?
Okay, the line is really when something is demeaning, degrading, physically or psychologically harmful or potentially harmful.
And that's definitely in the eyes of the beholder, right?
Well, no.
Okay.
I think that's I'm glad that you asked me that, because a lot of people say, it's okay with me. I don't care if I show my boobs or if I, you know, pretend to be, you know, screwing somebody. That's okay. What's the big deal? I'm not embarrassed by that. But if that's not what the policy is, if the policy of the school or the law of the state says, you know, that this is inappropriate behavior, then it is inappropriate behavior, whether you personally agree with that or not. In the same way that you're not supposed to be drinking, you know, if you're 17, and I'm sure most 17-year-olds say, what's the big deal? But if you're caught drinking or driving and drinking or whatever, you're in trouble. It doesn't matter if you feel it was okay or not.
My guest is Dr. Susan Lipkins, also with me in the studio, Thomas Bradley, co-host of WOSU's After the Score podcast. We'll return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We were listening to Strains of Script, Ohio, one of the hallmarks.
Le Reg. was the song is called The Regiment.
One of the hallmarks of Ohio State University Marching Band until yesterday, led by Marching Band Director Jonathan Waters. He was fired after a two-month investigation. Revealed a litany of allegations of a sexualized culture within the revered organization. Still with us on the phone is Dr. Susan Lipkins, psychologist and author of Preventing Hazing, excuse me, How Parents, Teachers, and Coaches Can Stop the Violence, Harassment, and Humiliation. We have an email that I wanted to get to real quick from Chris in Upper Arlington. Writes, I graduated from college in the mid-70s and entered a male-dominated industry. I experienced that kind of sexual harassment I read about in the band report. At least my nickname wasn't sexually explicit. I was nicknamed Queenie as I was the only female. When I read the report, I felt ill. I'm sick that society hasn't changed in 40 years. In fact, the behavior is far more crass than I experienced. And Dr. Lipkin, that's what you just mentioned. Lipkins, that's what you just mentioned, is that things have gotten even looser.
Much worse. Much more violent, much more humiliating, much more sexualized. And it gets worse every year. And part of the reason is something I call the blueprint of hazing, which is you come in, you're basically innocent. You just want to be part of the group. You get hazed. The next year, you're a bystander and you watch. Eventually, it's your turn. The victim now becomes the perpetrator, hazes others because they feel they have the right and duty to pass it on. But each time they do that, they want to put their own mark. So they increase the violence or they increased the humiliation, the sexualization, whatever it is. They had a little more alcohol, a little more paddling, a little more sexuality. So after 10 years, it's a lot more. But there's nobody there watching and saying, oh, look at how much it's increased. And 10 years later, it's even more.
You know, and Jonathan Waters actually grew up in the band, the Ohio State Band, and worked in lesser roles for several years. Do you find that that someone in his position is going to be more apt to be less critical? In other words, compared to if they brought in an outsider?
Absolutely. What happens with people like that and coaches also is that they have grown up in that culture. It's sort of like growing up in the religion. And if this is the way we do things, then this is the way we do things, and there is no really awareness. It's just like being in the family. This is how we act in the family, so doesn't everybody? So that the rules get bent. And what's clear to an outsider, you know, this is just how we do it, and what's the big deal, and nobody's been hurt. And so, you know, and they go through, it creates bonding, and, you know, and it gets the family feeling and all of that. And I'm not saying that there aren't some bonds and family feeling. I do believe you don't have to be demeaned or hurt or, you know, overly sexualized in order to feel close to somebody. But they do not see that they've grown up in that culture. So they just accept it as the culture.
Dr. Lipkins, this is Thomas Bradley, a host of WOSU's After the Score podcast. Ann and I were talking a little bit earlier about the Florida A&M band hazing case and now this one. Have you seen a trend in hazing cases in marching bands across the country? We've always known hazing to be in fraternities and sororities, and they're honestly doing a good job of cleaning that up.
Of course, in the Florida A&M case, a student died after a hazing beating on a band bus.
Different situations,
sure,
but
right.
Have you seen hazing increase in bands across the country?
Well, the truth is, I'm involved as an expert witness in such kinds of cases, marching bands have always had hazing. I think what really unique and interesting is, one, that it's in males and females. You know, usually in the football team, it's all guys, or sorority, it's all girls. You know, so what's different in the marching band is you have both. The second is what your guest was explaining is that it changes according to what instrument you play, like the rows and where you are and what, you know, each instrument has its own hazing ritual. And then there's an acceptance within the band that this will happen. And so it's much more complicated and, you know, from a cultural perspective, you see like the wider culture of pretty much 99% of the marching bands will have these kinds of hazing rituals. 1% may be able to say, oh, you know, I'm not doing that. But there's such peer pressure. You know, it's like they'll say, we're enforced, you're allowed to leave. But if you do leave, like in some of the cases I've been involved with, you'll leave, but you'll never rise in the band. You won't have any power. You'll be ostracized socially. You know, you'll be a pariah. So, yeah, you're still in the band, but you're not part of the group. There's that sort of very subtle line that says you don't have to do this, but if you don't do this, there's that implication that you're not one of us, and therefore you won't be treated with, quote, respect.
Doug in Westerville, you're on the air. You are an alumni of the OSU band?
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Anne. I didn't say that. I attended OSU 1 year in the 1980-81 school year.
Okay.
And what I remember is a report in the student newspaper, The Lantern, that was an expose on hazing that went on in OSU's band. I really appreciate Dr. Lipkin's comments, but I think, I guess the strongest comment I would make is that this is certainly not something that's just gone on for the last 2 years under this board director's watch. This is going on for at least 30 or 40 years, and maybe even longer. There was sexual hazing going on back in the 80s when I was a sophomore at OSU. I think she's probably right. It's just grown in its intensity in the decades since then.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I mean, thank you, Doug. I would say that there's no way they could whip together that songbook in a couple of years.
Right.
Those go back a long way, a lot of those. I don't know if you had a chance to look at the songbook.
I did. But, you know, it's like the songbook is bad. But then when you see what the kids are actually doing today beyond the songbook, it gets even worse.
And
you know,
a lot of that we can't
simulation.
Mention.
You know, like they're simulating sex, they're probably having sex, you know, they're exposing themselves. I mean, You know, it's funny because when you think about what the sexual revolution was like in the 60s and 70s, it was for girls and women not to be sex objects. And if you look at what's going on in campuses today, including this, it's like girls are happy to be sex objects, and it's like they don't even know what that means.
We have an email from Robert, writes, looking ahead, what kind of reception do you suppose the OSU band will receive in Ohio Stadium at the first home game and throughout the season in appearances at schools whose fight songs and alma maters are parodied in the Buckeye Band's unofficial songbook? And that's an interesting question and one we'll have to wait to get the answer for. But the band is scheduled to play with the Columbus Symphony this weekend for Picnic with the Pops. So we may find out something.
Tonight and tomorrow.
Tonight and tomorrow, right.
My experience is that people usually support the perpetrators. So they'll support the band and they'll say, you're so great and there shouldn't be such a big, you know, hullabaloo about this. You know, what's the big deal? They may blame the, the band director, but they are usually supporting the band. If they like the band, they're going to like the band, and it doesn't matter what they do.
Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
You're a former band member, right?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I've been listening to Dr. Lipskins and appreciate all she has to say. I do think there is a bit of generalization that goes on. You had a prior caller who was in the band at the same time I was, apparently, early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely agree with him. When we were in the band, I had a nickname. I got a nickname, as you saw in the report. My nickname is non-sexual in nature, and it's still referenced today when I go back to alumni functions and whatnot. It was a good experience for me. And we had always indicated and taught that, you know, if there's something you don't like, something you don't see that you like, mention it. And as the other caller stated, you know, there was folks in my rows that were rookies, and we had asked them to do rookie introductions where they stand in front of the bus and say who they are and where they come from and whatnot. And I recall one individual saying, you know, I have an exam coming up that I'm studying for, and we said, okay, you know, that's what you're here for, is you're here for school. And I'm not going to disagree that there are issues in culture.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that need to change. It is unfortunate that the administration felt releasing John Waters was the start of that solution, because I do believe John Waters was the is one of the best band directors that the Ohio State Marching Band has ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's unfortunate. I do think that John was heading in the right direction to correct things, you know, stopping the triptych, which is that newsletter during band trips. They weren't always lewd and crude and whatnot. They were just some fun road material to pass the time.
Mm-hmm.
But he felt that was inappropriate, and he stopped that.
Chris, could I ask you, in your travels with the band, you'd meet other band members from other schools, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you know if this do you have any sense about whether or not this was typical? Or was that stuff that didn't come up?
Now, more likely it didn't come up because Michigan State, I know you said you're an alumni of Michigan State. The Michigan State band is an awesome band to hang out and get to know.
Mm-hmm.
And no, you know, we never had conversations of, oh, my gosh, this type of thing's going on in my area. Does it go on in yours?
Yeah, okay. Well, hey, Chris, thanks a lot for calling us. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
You too.
One of the former band members I talked to yesterday, part of the reason maybe those conversations didn't happen is that they were telling me they're reading this report and everything they were sworn to secrecy over the past 4 to 5 years is now coming out in the pages of this report. So I bet that back and forth between different bands wouldn't happen just because they're sworn to secrecy.
No, Michigan State doesn't do things like that.
Of course they don't.
I think you're talking about the code of silence, and I think that is why and how hazing continues, is that it's as if there, people are walking through a doorway, and on top it says code of silence, you know, hazing, And they dropped their morals and their judgment, and now you're in a land where nothing counts, where nobody's going to say anything, and nobody will be held responsible. And that's why it continues and continues and continues until you have a whistleblower. And typically, you have the whistleblower is somebody who has been hurt a lot, either physically or psychologically, and that's why they have the strength to actually, you know, report something. Or in this case, it started with a parent. And a lot of times parents
but this,
don't.
But this for student told their parents. I don't know how many people would tell their parents that they were doing this kind of stuff.
When you're in enough pain or enough humiliation or you're ostracized or you know it's really not the right thing to do or you feel so something or other, you tell the parent. In cases I've been involved with, parents have been told they go to the school and the school really doesn't do a whole lot or they ostracize the kid more or they, you know, whatever else. They come back and, you know, so it's really... you know, it's very important for your listeners and for parents to have their connection to the children in marching bands, in teams, in Greek organizations, and to, like, pick up on the hazing and have the kids feel open and honest about, you know, their feelings. And if the parent has to report it, they can report it anonymously to the administration, because often the people in it, the victims themselves, are way too afraid to report it.
Dr. Lipkins, how hard is it to change a culture like this?
And it's very hard. Okay. Extremely hard.
Because there's now the allure of keeping it even more underground.
Right. It's very, very, very hard to change a culture. In anywhere, any kind of culture, it's hard. But what I point to, here's where I don't lose my faith, because you can in terms of trying to change this kind of stuff, is we taught kids not to let other kids drive drunk. You know, friends don't let friends drive drunk. And in many, many places, they actually take the keys out of each other's hands and not let them drive drunk. And, you know, that's an amazing public service announcement and campaign that has worked. You know, those are the kinds of things that we're looking at for hazing. It doesn't work in other, you know, in other areas. Maybe we do have less people smoking cigarettes, maybe not. But this, you know, changing culture takes decades. It takes incredible amount of work. But as we see with these alumni, they don't want to change. They look back and they say, those were the good old times. I've actually heard college presidents tell me to my face that when they got hazed, that was one of the best parts of their, you know, college experience. So
how do you change that?
If the alumni don't want to change and the current kids don't want to change and everybody, including either the coaches or the band leaders, say, hey, I went through it, it's not so bad, you can do it too, it's a lot of fun, then where's the impetus to actually change? And then the last thing is that the impetus comes from the law. And just like segregation, you know, there was a time when people didn't like segregation. And now we have, you know, a totally different society than we had like 50 years ago. And it was the law that pushed it through. And that's probably why having cases in court and following the law will eventually lead to a change in the culture.
The general consensus of former band members, from what I've heard, is they thought the change could be made without firing the director.
That they might have fired the best guy to make the changes.
To make the change. And in this, with the culture being this deep into where it was firing the director, in your opinion, something that had to happen?
You know, I'm afraid to say yes, but the truth is that in almost all hazing cases, the head, the coach, the athletic director, or the head of the band, they do get fired. And the reason they get fired is they really did know this was going on, and they really knew it was going on for a long time, and they really allowed it to happen, whether they condoned it, looked the other way, diminished how important it was. They knew. And they were part of it, and, you know, it was sort of like all in the family, code of silence, nobody tells, this is how we've done everything, and this is how we're going to continue. And we see that in government, and we see that in, you know, large, like, you know, the stock market. We see it all over the place. And at some point, you know, enough is enough, and things have to change, and they typically do change the leader, because it's really hard to change a culture if the leader really grew up in that and accepts that as, you know, everyday acceptable behavior.
Dr. Susan Lipkins, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Susan Lipkins, psychologist and author of Preventing Hazing, How Parents, Teachers, and Coaches Can Stop the Violence, Harassment, and Humiliation. Also, WOSU's After the Score podcast co-host and producer, Thomas Bradley. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ann.
Thanks to everyone for your calls, and thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.